Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Words About Books. Today we are going to be finishing up our discussion on Timothy Zahn's Dark Force Rising. This is the second half of a discussion on the book. We initially recorded this as one session, but we had to split it for time. So if you have not heard the first episode, please go back and check that out. We're going to jump right in where we left off. A quick recap. We had just discovered that Garmbel Iblis had purchased ships from the enigmatic Dark Force. And this legendary fleet that could tip the balance of power in the galaxy is out there, and it is a race between Thrawn's forces and the New Republic to get a hold of it. With that, I am Ben. He is Nate. Let's begin.
It's actually called the Katana Fleet. I don't know why they call it the Dark Force.
Because the Fedora Fleet was lost too long ago.
Yeah, basically they're like, we'll talk to Mon Mothma for you. We'll get this all straightened out. Then they're contacted by who they think is Luke, but it turns out to be Tobacco Man. Niles
Ferrier.
And he's like, hey,
I don't know how it's written, but it's not that hard to say.
I forgot his last name actually at that time. So Niles is like, hey, yeah, I called you here under false pretenses, but I know who has the coordinates to the Dark Force, which everyone knows about now. It's not even a big deal. Like, it's just a fleet that was lost hundreds of years ago in hyperspace when everyone went mad and then died, and then their fleet was stranded in perfect condition.
It was a fleet that was lost exactly 40 years ago.
Yeah, whatever. It's like, yeah, no big deal. Everyone knows about it now. I know the name of the guy, or whatever, and I know where you could possibly find him. We should team up. And they're like, F*** you, Niles! And then they leave. But Niles planned a tracking device with his weird shadow monster guy.
It's some kind of, like, gaseous alien that can go incorporeal, and it has a name, but they just call it a wraith because it looks like a ghost, and I think they just don't care anymore about pretending it's not a ghost.
So then they go
also,
to...
Also, this is one of those points I was talking about where everybody's like, I suspect a double cross, even though I have no reason to suspect a double cross.
They had intuition.
I was the Force.
Lando rolled an insight check, and he got a +3 modifier because he doesn't like the guy.
I thought you were going to say because he's naturally charismatic.
Either or. And the DM was like, yeah, this guy is, he might be double crossing you. And so Lando's like, let's go, Han. I think this guy's up to no good. And it turns out he was. And for some reason, he hates Lando and wants to kill Lando specifically.
It's more like the DM told them, you get the sense that there's something about this deal that's not entirely on the level. And then the player is like, yep, he's going to betray us. I'm out. I saw the DM's eyes. I know what he's doing. I know Ben.
Yeah, Lando's just like, I don't like the guy. We're not going to deal with him. It's like, but you could get a bunch of ships. You need those ships. You blew up all of the other ships in the last book.
And it's like, okay, here's the other thing. So, sexy old lady sticks a gun in Han's back.
I'm sorry, what?
She's described as being kind of hot, right?
Who?
But she's got gray hair.
Who is this?
The lady that takes him to the daddy.
What are you talking about?
So, just ignore, audience, ignore him. So there's a sexy old lady at some point in the book who, like, sticks a gun in Han's back. And she's like,
and he asks her, is that a gun? Are you happy to see me?
And Han is like, okay, this lady's threatened to kill me, but I'm going to see how this plays out because maybe I could figure out what's going on with Phalia. And then this other guy comes up and he's like, I know where all these dreadnoughts came from. I could tell you the guy's name. And they're like, I'm not even going to talk to you. I hate you. Go away.
That's a good point, actually. You make a very good point.
You could argue it was because she was a sexy older lady. which I'm going to stick to. If you reread that passage, she's described as being like a face that, like, despite its age, is still like welcoming or something. Like, I don't know. Han was checking her out.
But he immediately forgot about her when he ran into the senator. Oh, yes.
We ran into Garm Bell Daddy.
Garm Bell Daddy. Oh, my God.
I'm just marveling at how far our podcast has come.
Yeah. So they go to an underwater casino, and they look for the guy for 6 hours, only to find that Niles beat them there first. And then the Empire comes in to attack.
Okay, so this was screwing me up.
Okay.
The whole time, I'm thinking, Talon Card in the first chapter, so this is your Chekhov's gun. Talon Card knows where the Dark Force is. And
yep.
Garm Bell Iblis bought a bunch of Dark Force ships off a mysterious contact. They didn't give the name, but they're describing him. And the whole time I'm like, I don't remember Talon Card's description. Did they just give the description of Talon Card? The whole time I'm thinking that this contact they're going to find at the casino, they're going to find Talon Card or one of his associates. But no, it's a third guy who also knows
about the Dark Force. Everyone knows about the Dark Force now, Ben. It's not a big deal.
So, like, it's the thing, though, of, like, it's the Chekhov's gun. You put the gun on the table, and we're all waiting for it to get used, and then somebody just kicks in the door and starts shooting everybody.
It's subverting your expectations, Ben.
It did subvert my expectations, but I like to be right. This is the other thing about subverting people's expectations. People like to be right. It's rewarding to figure something out. Take a hint, Star Wars writers.
So yeah, Niles Ferrier has the contact, which is some other guy who happened to be palling around with Card back in the day, and Han and Lando are forced to escape the underwater casino. The Empire got their man. Anything more you want to say about Han and Lando's side quests?
Wait, how did that end?
They escape the underwater casino with escape pods, and that's the end of their side quest. They're going to link up with Luke and Leia and Talon Card for the final leg of the journey later on.
Did we mention that Tobacco Man is working for the Empire?
I did not. He is. After New Cove, he's picked up, and Thrawn's like, yeah, you've got a month to get me these ships or a guy who can get them for me. Be gone.
And just off screen, he got the guy that could get them for him?
Yeah, he tailed Lando and Han to the casino, and he knew the guy's name and face or whatever, so he had an advantage over Han and Lando.
He tailed them, but he got there first?
Well, they spent 6 hours trying to look for him. So I presume he got there second, but he had information that they didn't have, so he was able to get the guy first.
Where did he get that information?
I don't know. He's a smuggler who smuggles and with.
Did that literally just happen off screen?
It probably happened off screen. Niles is not an important character, but he keeps showing up, so presumably he knows everything.
Oh my god! Yeah, I didn't even. Like, I kind of lost the thread of the connective tissue of all these side quests. So we started off looking for evidence to clear Admiral Akbar.
Yeah, but that's all over with. No one cares about that anymore.
And now we're looking for the Dark Force.
We started off with information on Admiral Akbar. We met Senator Daddy. And now we need to find that Dark Force because Thrawn wants it. And we gotta get it.
But Thrawn thought that Han and Lando would be looking for evidence?
He thought that they'd be looking for evidence somewhere else. He's like, it's weird that they went to New Cove.
But he sent Tobacco Man after them.
No, he did not. He sent Tobacco Man after the Dark Force, and Tobacco Man thought, I bet Han and Lando are looking into this. I don't know why he made that assumption. It's because this book is called Dark Force Rising, Ben. okay? He knew that the good guys were also going to be looking into the Dark Force because he read the title of the script. So everyone knows about the Dark Force now. So he knew that they'd be looking
for it. Oh, wait. Joris Sabaoth is also the Dark Force.
But how was he rising?
That just clicked. He got a major power up at the end.
How, though? He got his ass kicked. Is he a Saiyan? Does he get stronger every time he's close to death?
No, he comes back at the end in the giant space battle, and he's like, I can control everything from really far away now.
Yeah, Thrawn should have just shot him right then and there.
I'm kind of surprised he didn't.
Yeah, he should have been like, okay, hold on. There's a logical way for us to, bam, dead.
Thrawn's like, hang on, I'll be right back, hang on. It comes back with one of those, like, force rats that, like, you can't use the force when the rats are around, and then he just shoots him.
He had those in that meeting. He met with him with the rats around him, and then he went, fine. Well, let's discuss our deal. Instead of being like, hey, what's that on your face? Bam! It's a laser hole where I shot you. I'm Thrawn. You just got Thrawn, motherfucker.
You just got Thrawn. Oh, Timothy's on. You missed a golden opportunity for, like, merchandising. That could have been a catchphrase.
You just got Thrawn. Well, yeah, now that means we can do it. We can design a shirt with intellectual property and put that on there and then just hope for the best.
Words about books. Or Words About Books Bandcamp store. You just got Thrawn, motherfucker.
So let's go to Luke, because we're talking about Sabaoth. So Luke, in the first book, Sabaoth reached out to Luke and was like, come to me, I can make you a true Jedi Master. And Luke was like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. And then he got sidetracked with the rest of that book's plot, and so he's now like, well, I split off from Luke and Lando. I'm sure they'll clear Admiral Ackbar's name. There's no way they're going to get on a completely different track and never do that, so...
I do love how Timothy Zahn even points out that, like, he writes something like, Luke gets flashbacks to the Battle of Hoth, where he had to go a separate way from everybody else to go to Dagobah. Like, even Timothy Zahn is like, yeah, we're doing that exact same thing again. Luke's gonna go to some weird planet to talk to a master.
Yep. He does that, and Luke also, you know, he's also stopped the quest to clear Admiral Ackbar's name, but he's sure that Han and Lando, they'll take care of that. So,
meanwhile, Admiral Ackbar's under house arrest, just waiting for his friends to come home.
Yeah. I'm surprised in the end they weren't like, Luke meets up with them, and they're like, hey, we found these ships, and we found Senator. And he's like, wait, hold on, what? What about Admiral Ackbar? And they just kind of look at him.
Freeze frame, laugh track, credits.
So, the short story of this is that Sabaoth is like, I'm going to trick Luke into being my pupil, and we'll be super powerful together. And Luke is like, this guy's a nut job.
Oh, no, you're so underselling that. Like, there's so much setup. Like, every interaction with Sabaoth for before he meets Luke, he's like, it's going to be so hard. Oh no, I'll do it the audiobook way, because he sounds like a crazy grandpa. So it's like, it's going to be so hard to convince another Jedi to bend to my will without even alerting him to it. It's going to take all my cunning and skill. and then Luke lands, and Sabaoth is like, let's go be dicks. Yeah, the does. Force makes you better than everyone, Luke. The Force makes you the Ubermensch, and you can impose your will on everything. And Luke's like, I don't know, Master Sabaoth. That sounds like kind of the exact opposite of everything every Jedi Master has ever told me. And he's like, those guys were assholes, Luke. I know what's up. Luke's like, oh.
He is like that. I got Luke. The vibe I got was that Luke is a guy who works at a nursing home, and he feels bad for Sebaeth, so he's like, I gotta take care of this guy. I gotta make sure he gets his applesauce and his medicine. And
like, the whole time, you're primed for Luke to be, like, blind to it. You're primed to be frustrated by this. Like, you're primed for Sabaoth to put on a show, and Luke's gonna have to see through it after a lot of, like, misadventures. And like, they're even doing the setup where it's like R2 senses something's up, and R2's talking to Luke, and R2's like, I don't know about this one, Luke. And Luke's like, oh no, that guy's insane. Yeah.
he immediately recognizes it. And Sebaoth is using something to, like, try to cloud his mind. And Luke is still like, this guy's a crazy nut job.
Yeah, he's using the Force to try to manipulate Luke, and Luke feels tired and out of it. But, like, even then, Luke is like, nah, this is not good. He is clearly gone insane. And he doesn't think he's evil. He thinks he's gone insane. But yes. Can I just say, it sounds like I'm making fun of it. This was so refreshing. I loved this. I loved how this played out. I loved that Luke didn't fall for it. I loved that Sabaoth just came off like a like a complete lunatic. And Luke saw through it instantly. I loved that. Timothy Zahn had to have done it on purpose. This is a good way to subvert somebody's expectations. Because my expectation was I was gonna hate it, and I loved it. I loved everything about Luke and Sabaoth, and I was so primed to just be annoyed with this part of the book. It was great. It was great. Sabaoth is just, like, so over the top. He goes to, like, he has the villagers build him a throne where he sits in judgment over them. And, yeah. And, like, one of them is like, I have a dispute with this guy, and Sabaoth just, like, force lightnings him, and Luke is like,
dispute over.
Luke is like, it's Luke's turn to sit in judgment, and he listens to, like, some case of, like, property damage, and Luke is like, okay, I think you're gonna make these restitutions, and the council is gonna determine the exact value of the property, because I'm not from around here, I don't really know how that works. And Sabaoth is like, what the f*** was that? Why didn't you shock him? Luke, I don't even think you're listening to me anymore, Luke. You should have done more violence. And Luke is just like, oh, this guy. Maybe I can cure him?
Like I said, I got the vibe that he's like, he's taking care of his old grandfather, or he's working in a nursing home or something. He's just like, I feel sorry for this guy because, like, no one likes him and he's crazy.
No, you totally get the vibe that it's going to, like, Sabaoth is going to do some, like, subtle or even, like, overt force manipulation of Luke, that Luke's going to become hypnotized or something, and we're going to have to deal with that. And the whole trope plays out. Because, like, even then, Mara Jade has to come, and she's like, oh no, Luke's being seduced by this dark Jedi. I need Luke's help. I'm gonna have to go break Luke's brainwashing. And so you're even primed for that part of the trope where, like, the unlikely ally has to come and, like, break the conditioning. And Mara Jade gets there, and she's all prepared to, like, have this discussion with Luke where Luke doesn't want to see the truth. And she gets there, and Luke's like, hey, Mara, yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, that's how it happened. She's like, somehow Skywalker managed to figure out that this guy's a crazy nut job. It's like, yeah, it's pretty obvious.
No, the way he was acting with you, like, the part I wasn't supposed to see, like they have that thing where Sabaoth is talking to Mara Jade, and he's like, yeah, you're right, Mara Jade, I'm a secret asshole, but I got Luke wrapped around my little finger. And then Luke pops out, and he's like, oh no, Luke, did you hear that? And it's like, yeah, no, that was not when I started to realize there was a problem here. Like, this whole time you've been a crazy asshole. Mara, let's just go. Let's go.
Yeah, we're out of here.
I'm ready to leave now.
So, let's talk about Mara Jade then. She surfaces like halfway through the book. They're on the run, and she's finally captured by a Star Destroyer. And when they're like going through the whole motion, like, "Hey, unidentified ship, you will power down your ship. Prepare for boarding." She's like, "Oh, hey, thanks. I'm glad you guys finally dropped by. I've been waiting forever. I'm the Emperor's Hand. Here's my code. I need to go talk to Thrawn now." And so she's brought to Endor, because that's where the Millennium Falcon is, which more on that later, because Thrawn is like, they're getting more secretive. They abandoned their ship in the Endor orbit, and they went to New Cov. They're getting smarter. They're getting more subtle. Our enemies are becoming wiser. And really, what it is they just keep going to a different quest and forgetting about the previous one.
I want you to be Pelion.
Oh, God. All right.
Just tell me you found the Millennium Falcon in orbit.
All right. Grand Admiral Thrawn, we found the Millennium Falcon orbiting Endor.
How odd. Nothing in Leia Organa Solo's drawings in the margins of her notes indicated that this would be her behavior. Let me board the Falcon. My God, how much have I missed? Look at these notes, Pelion. What do they tell you? And he holds up, it's like a, she's taking a bunch of detailed notes on council meetings, but like in the margins, there's like little doodles of like smiley faces and spirals. What does this say to you, Pelion?
She's a really bad drawer.
No. I wish you would understand, Captain. Leia Organa Solo has clearly gone to the Nolgri homeworld. Everything about this spiral indicates that she's going to communicate with, I forget his name, but Clan Kimber. And, we're gonna have to go there now. Ready the ship.
And then he breaks a hip.
Is that Mara Jade?
Well, they actually don't figure out about the Nagri plot, because Leia...
Then why does he go to the Nagri planet?
He goes there because of... first, I think it was convenience, because he was like, we need to motivate these guys to try harder to kidnap Leia. I'm going to go there in person. And then, one of the survivors of the raid on Kashyyyk returned, but touched down at a different platform, and so he's like, well, that's odd. And then he catches him in a lie, like, you were captured by the Wookiees but set free. He doesn't know Leia was ever on that planet.
Doesn't he?
No, he does not.
I think he suspects. He saw those notes in the margin. He knows she's up to something.
No, he knows she's up to something, but he doesn't know what. And he says something like, they released their captive to distract me from their true goals at New Cov and somewhere else. He thinks that the whole Nagri thing was a distraction. He does not ever suspect that Leia was on that planet.
I see.
Which is important, because that comes up in the next book.
You make a good point, Captain Pelion. Now tell me why Mara Jade is on my ship.
Well, she says she's the Hand of the Emperor.
Interesting. Mara, if you really are the Hand of the Emperor, what were you wearing on the night of December 12th, 1972?
That is basically
I have here 67 images of outfits. Pick out the correct one.
That is how he confirms her identity. We're not making that up.
I don't remember what you look like, but I remember vividly the shoulder thing you were wearing. It was a weird piece of jewelry I'd never heard of.
Yeah, some strange piece of jewelry. And where did you meet me before? Oh, I met you at the Emperor's secret promotion of you to Grand Admiral. And then after that, he's like, you were the Emperor's Hand? Well, he had a lot of hands. You're not special. You're garbage. Now tell me where Talon Card is, or I'll throw you off the ship.
Good God.
He just gets really angry with her.
Well, she force chokes him.
Well, he had it coming. But that was later. He starts by saying, you're not special, you're nothing, and then he double crosses her and kidnaps Card, and then she gets mad at him and starts force choking him. So he was an asshole before she started choking him.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder why he doesn't like her. Is it because, like, I wonder if he even liked the Emperor.
Well, he does kind of think that the Emperor was an idiot for his plan. Or maybe that was Pelion. One of them was like, yeah, that whole Battle of Endor was a dumb idea. I don't know why he did
it. That was a dumb idea. Because the one thing we have learned, and this is really strange in retrospect, and credits to Timothy Zahn for pointing it out, I guess, is like the possibility of getting another Dark Jedi is worth like trillions and trillions of dollars in like material, military material. Like one Jedi is so powerful, and it's like they're not, though. They're really not. I mean, they're good at fighting and they could do a lot of fancy like jumping and stuff, but
they can also motivate your fleet with magic.
Yeah, they can motivate your fleet with magic. I could do that with drugs. I could also just make a robot fleet. I don't know why, like, I mean, this is the key thing in Star Wars, and I'm a computer guy, so of course I'm going to go here, but, like, they brought it up. Like, the whole deal with the Dark Force fleet is that it's slave-rigged together so that one ship can control many ships, so you don't need as many crew.
Right.
But, like, why isn't... This comes up later on. I think somebody does design a ship that can... No, that's Star Trek. Yeah, but, like, what? Like, the Dark Force fleet... So, I guess, like, a normal dreadnought requires, like, 100,000 crew or something, but, like, with this slave system, they could get by with 2,000 crew, but it's like, what do they do? What
they
do they do that...
operate the ship.
Yeah, but, like, why can't that be automated?
Because droids in this R2-D2, universe all have personalities for some reason.
That's better. Like, okay, R2-D2 can fly the X-Wing by himself. He uses it like a gun and points it at Mara Jade, and it's awesome, actually.
Yeah, but no one cares about R2-D2 as the hero, so that's why we don't do that. That's the reason.
But why don't you just make a... Why don't you just make a 2,000 R2-D2s?
Because who
give
would
them fingers.
See that?
Me.
Well, you're not important, Ben.
dude, how many
droids
everybody
are
loves
used
R2-D2?
For menial labor in this universe? That's all they're used for.
But like, what are the 2,000 people doing? They can't all be doing super exciting stuff. Like, one guy's got to just be, like typing in coordinates.
Yeah, but shut up. How about that, Ben? How about that as a counter-argument to what you're saying?
Is it, like, a Neuromancer situation? Are the Turian police going to come if there's a sufficiently advanced AI?
Well, they're all sufficiently advanced. C-3PO's a sentient being.
Kind of. I mean, C-3PO... sentient, but a dumbass.
You could be both.
Like, if C-3PO
is... They're not mutually exclusive.
I am both. But, point is, I don't know... God, why would you design C-3PO? He's annoying in the books.
Oh, and Han says, never tell me the odds to Luke.
Yeah, I noticed that. I noticed that. There is definitely... You could definitely tell this was early days for the... expanded universe, because there is way more movie fan service than there is in later books.
So we got off topic. We got way off topic.
Yeah.
We were talking about Mara Jade and how she's not special and Thrawn double crosses her, and then we start talking about automation.
It matters. It's all connected. Automation is coming for all of us all the time.
So
especially Mara Jade.
Mara Jade, on the other hand, it's not coming for her. She has a secret backdoor into the computer system of this Star Destroyer. So she knows how
her
to find Sebaoth.
Huh?
She wants to break Luke out of, or break Card out of jail, but she knows that she's going to need Luke's help. So she finds him with Dee Salamiri, and Sebaoth, he can't force lightning her. He's powerless. So he throws a giant rock at her. Why didn't he do
I
that
also
to
loved
Thrawn
this
in the previous book?
I also loved this. Thank you, Timothy Zahn, Thank you so much. I don't even care that it didn't happen in the previous book. I love this anti-magic field. It's like, okay, I can't throw magic into the field. Here's a rock. I think even mentioned that in the first episode of, like, why doesn't he just throw a bunch of rocks at him?
And the answer is shut up.
The answer is Sabaoth is an idiot.
Well, he is insane.
And he just realized he could do that.
He's like, wait a minute. I have other powers. Maybe if I jump really high at her. No. Hold on. I can throw things at her first. Yeah, we'll do that. So he throws a giant rock at her. And then he's like, I've seen you in my visions. Which, ew. And he's like, you're going to kneel before me someday. And then Luke is just standing there, and he's like, why are you out here? They incapacitate Sabaoth, and Mara's like, well, let's kill him. Like, let's just shoot him. And Luke is like, no, that's cold-blooded murder. We can't do that. So they just leave him there. I'm sure he won't be an issue later on. Let's just move on. He doesn't come back until the end when he's super powerful. Because like a Saiyan, he was close to death, and he became super powerful.
He got a Zenkai boost, yes.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Mara and Luke, they pretend to be a resupply vessel. They board the Star Destroyer, and they cut their way into a lower deck, and then they do the classic steal an enemy uniform to sneak around, just like most Star Wars does.
Luke even brings that up. He's like, no stormtrooper uniforms.
So they steal some pilot uniforms. He does manage to use the Force. He's like, I don't want to scramble their brains. Maybe I can just, like, suppress their curiosity long enough to steal some suits. And he climbs
this
up.
This was literally like a D&D thing.
So he's subverting expectations because he's not in a stormtrooper suit. And he's climbing up the garbage chute rather than down it. And he breaks Card out. And then Thrawn is like, wait a minute. Hold on. There's someone here on board. We know this because of how exactly? I don't even remember. He's like, he immediately is like, huh. There's some undersized damage to a transport ship. Oh, no. It's lightsaber damage. Oh my god. Sound an alert and turn off the computer and go find Card. We've got an intruder on board. And obviously it's Luke and also Mara Jade. And they're going to get Card.
I remember this because they had to cut their way into something. And unlike
they cut through their ship and through the floor to get to a lower deck.
Yeah, and unlike every other time somebody uses a lightsaber to cut through something, like, they make a big point of saying, we're going to try to make it not look like a lightsaber cut through it in case anyone ever finds it.
Yeah,
which
and
has
they're
never
like,
been a concern in the past.
And they're the only way they're going to notice that is if they look directly up at the ceiling.
Yeah. And so Thrawn does, or someone does, and Thrawn is.
Yeah, Pelion's
because.
Like, Thrawn is like, oh, I'm about to go to bed, but I just wanted to review some reports. Hey, hold on. What is this? That looks like lightsaber cuts. Sound the alarm.
Yeah, because they tried to hide it from Thrawn, and only a genius would be able to figure it out. We need to be reminded one more time that Thrawn is a genius. And it's not like there could just be cameras all over the ship.
No, there are sensors. That's about it. Yeah.
We know their heat signatures. We know their chemical composition. If only we could see their face.
Yeah, they sneak around in some maintenance shafts. They get into some fights. Thrawn is, like, tracking their position based on their carnage. Like, oh, they beat up some guys in this elevator, and then they ran to some stormtroopers that they had to kill. Okay, this is the general direction. Okay, I bet they're going to go to Deepstar. Wait a minute! Where's the Millennium Falcon that we picked up? That's where they're gonna go. And that is, in fact, exactly where they go, but they manage to beat his stormtroopers there, and then they escape using the Millennium Falcon. And And luckily, in Leia's story, which we'll get to here in a moment, she decides to forego picking the Millennium Falcon up in order to go directly to Coruscant to get things done quicker. So that was really convenient, because otherwise she'd go to Endor and be like, where the hell is it?
Somebody stole my ship. And then we'd have to watch her call her space insurance and then call the space cops. And Han would be so mad. Do ships not have locks or keys or, like, how can anybody just start any ship? I don't even care.
Well, he didn't start it up. He tractor beamed it. He just grabbed it.
The thing that made me laugh is again, Pelion is there. His entire role in this book is to, like, be the straight man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's there to go, eh, it's probably no big deal. And then Thrawn's like, no big deal. Look here, Pelion. If you look at this fine cutting mechanism, you would know that microscopic cauterization consistent with lightsabers. You fool, Pelion. Pelion's just like, oh,
I do like how Pelion, though, eventually starts to, like become Watson, where he's like, okay, I don't think this is a big deal.
Yes.
But everything has always been a big deal in the past, so I'm just going to ask Thrawn. And he's like, Thrawn, we got this report that something is slightly off in engineering. I don't think it's a big deal, but you always do, so, like, tell me why it's a big deal. And Thrawn is like, ah, it's good that you came to me with this, Captain. I've seen Talon Card's art. Or no, he's seen the art that Talon Card collects. Ah. And I know that based on this, he's not going to go for the emergency escape pods, or he's not going to go back to his supply ship. He's going to deep storage. Where did you put the Millennium Falcon? I put it in deep storage, sir.
I did like that he didn't immediately assume, like, they're just going to escape. He's like, you know, they could do damage to our ship and sabotage us before they escape, so we can't just assume that we need to guard the hangar with 100% of our forces. I did like that.
I did like Thrawn's dipshit move, though, where he's like, he correctly deduces, Mara Jade must have some sort of backdoor access into our computer systems. Captain, shut down the computer. And Pelion's like, that computer that we used to do literally everything? Yes, shut it down. That way Mara can't use it against us. And then for the rest of the chapter, Pelion keeps... They keep trying to use the computer and remembering it's turned off. Because Pelion's a commander who commands through a computer, and he can't command anybody to do anything because the computer's off.
Yeah, they have to use, like, radios, basically.
It's a minor inconvenience to Mara Jade, yes, and crippling to Pelion.
And when they escape with the Millennium Falcon, your first thought is, oh, they'll just tractor beam it, no problem. They need the computer to precisely do that, though.
Yeah, and Pelion's just kind of, like, low-key irritated with Thrawn the entire chapter. I like that he screwed up for a change. That was nice.
Yes. And Thrawn's like, well, they got Card, but Card isn't going to immediately give the Republic all those ships. They're going to negotiate, and, you know, then he goes to the casino, like we said, and he ends up getting the information anyway. Do you want to quickly go through Leia's story? Because it is important for the sequel. She actually does some things in this book. Last time, she was just constantly running away from harm, and this time, she's meeting with the Nagri and trying to be a diplomat.
Okay, so, yeah, tell me about Leia.
Yeah, so she meets up with the guy who tried to kidnap her last book, and she was like, don't kill him. We should talk with him and learn more about this race of people who keep coming after me. Turns out they're called Nagri. And he vowed, he and their entire race vowed to serve Lord Vader. And since she is the daughter of Lord Vader, she gets those special privileges. Lucky her. And they go to the Nagri homeworld, and it's garbage. It's some sort of humongous natural disaster happened, and it happened probably recently, they think. So this is important. The guy's name is Kabarak. That's not the important thing. But he is the matriarch's third son. That's important later. It comes up. It's a play on words, and I didn't dislike it, actually. So he's the third son, and so Leia's like, oh no, this is our fault, because only a reactor spill from an older ship could have devastated the planet's ecosystem like this. Like, crops won't grow, there's a native grass that smells really weird, that's the only thing that survived, there were humongous natural disasters, like, this species was pushed almost to extinction, and she thinks that it was a rebel ship, because they were using older ships, so we're at fault here, and she basically has to come with grips, like, she wants to help these people, but at first she's kind of doing it just for selfish reasons of, like, we don't want you working for the Empire because they're bad. Work for us instead. But she eventually comes to grips with, like, my presence here just puts you all in danger. You know, if I try to turn you guys against each other, that just sows discord amongst your people. That'll just make things worse for you. And the Empire might just come in and kill you all rather than let you change to our side anyway. And then Thrawn shows up. Because he does that. He shows up to inspire them to kidnap Leia more aggressively. And then he's like, huh, this Kabarak guy, he didn't land. Yeah, this is where Pelion's like, it's kind of weird. He landed at his native village instead of at the main port. That's probably no big deal. Hold on, Commander. That is weird. That's so weird and suspicious. I bet he's hiding something. Let's go interrogate him personally. He's like, how did you escape? How did you get here? Why did it take you a month to report? And then they found there was Wookiee hair on his ship. So he thinks that this guy was kidnapped, or he was captured, and then for some reason he was released. And so he's a traitor, and he is going to be publicly shamed. So Leia has made everything worse, right? And and then finally Leia's looking at some, like, genealogy stuff, and she's like, I have this plan, like, we're gonna bust him out, even though the risks to me and my 7-month pregnant ass are really great, because we could be captured and turned over to Thrawn, but I don't care, I'm getting your third son out. And he's like, and she's like, I really appreciate that. You know, after I lost all my sons, it was really hard. She's like, hold on. You lost all your sons, but he's your third son. She's like, yeah, third son. The son of my son of my son. And that's when Leia...
The son of my son.
Son of my son. Yeah. Yeah. Son of my son. Whatever. Third son. So she's like, wait. Hold on. How long ago was this shit? How long ago did your planet get ruined? She's like, that was like, I don't know, like 40 years ago, 45, 50. She's like, that wasn't us. How did they not clean this up in 50 years? So, and then there's some really terrible foreshadowing of, like, one of the cleaning droids is acting really strange, says C-3PO. Like, oh my god, it's a spy bot. So she goes and she...
Yeah. I want to like zoom in on that bit a little bit though, because what C-3PO actually says, he says to Leia, one of the cleaning droids is acting really weird, and Leia is like, oh my god, go away, you ass. And
she is C-3PO, she's the anti-Thrawn. Like, if that were Pelion, Thrawn would be like, go grab it at once, it's a spy.
But then C-3PO goes, yeah, It's really weird, because it's like asking a bunch of questions specifically about you and me. And it's always like hanging around watching us and not cleaning anything. And it's active late in the night. And it keeps trying to find out exactly what we're doing here. And Leia's like, It's probably a malfunction, you dumbass. Go away.
The anti-Thrawn. Yeah, Nothing is a problem.
Like the most suspicious, most obviously a spy droid behavior. And Leia's just like...
It takes her a while to piece it together. To be fair, maybe if Chewbacca had told her, she'd take it seriously. But she's like, oh god, C-3PO, can you fuck off already? I hate you. I don't know why we still hang around with you.
It would be funny if it were intentional. Like, if she was honestly ignoring him just because it was C-3PO, but that's not the vibe I got. It would have been better if they hadn't even had that scene, because there's another scene where Thrawn, like, puts the droid together and deploys it. So, like, we already know as the audience she's being watched. We didn't need C-3PO to tell her, hey, you're being watched by a spy droid, and she's like, shut up.
Well, she figures it out when she goes to talk to the council, and all the tribes come together, and she's like, guys, the Empire's been lying to you. I figured it all out. You know that grass that smells weird? That's actually grass that's poisoned by the Empire and planted here to keep your planet perpetually poisoned. And, like, those droids are just there to slowly clean it up. They're doing it at a snail's pace intentionally to keep you on the hook longer. Look! There's a weird droid over there that's acting weird! And it immediately runs away, so it's, like, admitting guilt. They're like, get it! So they get it, they bring it to her. For some reason, the spy droid does not have an antenna, so it can't transmit its data. I don't know why they didn't do that, but okay.
Leia actually says, maybe it's the Force.
Yes, she said, ah, the Force is still with us. Like, okay, sure.
I got big protagonist energy.
So, well, that is good for her, right? So, she...
It's good for her children, because she'd be dead.
She opens the droid, and there's a chemical in it, and a drop of that immediately kills some of that grass. And that's when all the council's like, oh my god, we've been tricked. We've been lied to. And Leia's like, you don't have to join us.
Bamboozled. Can I zoom in on that real quick, though? Because I'd imagine there's a lot of fluids in a lot of machines that would kill grass. Like, if you pour gasoline on grass...
It killed it instantly, though, Ben. That's the difference.
Does it kill everything instantly, though?
Well, she didn't test it on anything. And shut up, Ben.
Are they sure it's not just acid?
No. They're not sure.
The implication is that, yeah, it's a specific chemical to kill this particular grass, but,
Yeah, the Empire is purposefully keeping their planet polluted, and only cleaning it at a snail's pace. They're like, oh, it takes like 2 weeks for this to clear like a half acre of land for farming. And Leia's like, well, turns out we can just get you this chemical and like, we can restore your planet. And they're like, we've got to discuss this. And Leia's like, all right, cool. I'm going to go back to Coruscant. I'll get you more of that chemical. I'm not going to go pick up the Millennium Falcon. I sure hope that's still exactly where I left it. Bye. And that's the end of her side quest. So Card tells Han, Luke, and Lando where the Dark Force is, tells them to go ahead of the Republic. Meanwhile, Faela and Leia and Card go after them a day later. And also Admiral Ackbar is still in house arrest and never mentioned again. So Luke arrives there first, also with Wedge, I guess, and Rogue Squadron, because, you know, of course. And they board the main ship of the Dark Force, and then an Imperial Star Destroyer shows up, so they start fighting. And then Faela comes in, and he's trying to arrest them. Then a Star Destroyer shows up, and he's like, prepare to pull out, haha, giggity. And Leia then turns on an intercom and is like, you don't care about the soldiers at all. And he's like, no, I don't! And the soldiers mutiny against him. And so they back up Luke and Rogue Squadron against the Star Destroyer. And then another Star Destroyer comes in, but it's not Thrawn's because Sebeoth doesn't want him to go. And then the Senator's men show up and Card's men show up and there's a big battle and a Star Destroyer explodes. But at the end of it, Card is like, have you counted how many ships are out here? It's actually not like 200. It's like 10. There's only 10 ships left. The Empire already got all these ships. And then they're like, well, that's okay. That's a lot of ships. That's a lot of people. They can't train all the personnel that they need to man all these ships. And then Han's like, hey, Luke, come up here. I need your help. I need to show you something. We're fucked. And then Luke comes up and they're like, hey, wait a minute. These are clones! Because, you see, at the beginning of the first book, Thrawn finds two technologies that will help beat the Republic. One was a cloaking device, and one was cloning technology. So they're gonna have a fleet within a few weeks or whatever. Dun, dun, dun!
You know, I did just realize that the implication is that Thrawn is like not just cloning but like duplicating a person, cuz they're saying using clones is going to cut down on the training time, but the clones from the Clone War had to be specifically still trained. I mean, they grew faster and reached, you know, maturity faster, so you would have like the raw material for your army, but they still had to like physically train them. They couldn't just like copy the knowledge from one to the next.
Yeah, but they're just going to be, Ben, they're going to be doing what stupid automation droids can apparently do, according to you. So like, they don't need to know all that much. Just hit these blinking buttons when I tell you to, and we'll get by just fine.
I'm going to say like, you could automate that with not even future technology. Like,
yeah.
You but just you automate what, that Ben? Now.
I would rather have organic people than droids. You know why? Because shut up. That's why.
Like, Elon Musk has a rocket that can land itself.
Yeah, but is it full of clones, Ben? Exactly. It's like, not as cool.
Is it cool? They're just people that...
Yeah.
They're just people that look like each other.
Yeah, they're people, Ben. Real people who are expendable, Ben. Real people who have cloned families that will weep when they die, Ben.
It is also like the implication that killing a clone isn't as bad as killing a person.
A real person. Let's just get it out. Let's drop the pretense. A real person. Clones don't have thoughts and feelings. They're disposable people, Ben. If you can even call them people.
I didn't like... I'll be real with you. I was kind of over it by the end of the book.
Are you not excited for the action-packed conclusion where clone people are going to pilot a fleet of ships at the Rebels?
I barely followed the action. I didn't feel like there were any stakes. I didn't think any important character was going to die because there was nothing to die for anymore.
Yeah, there was, Ben. There was a twist. What if Luke had died in that battle? Never mind the fact that you've read all those other books.
Well, never mind the fact that I know I'm reading a Star Wars franchise book and they're not going to kill Luke Skywalker in the first one.
But that would be subverting expectations. And then they can clone him and bring him back. And then he could have memories of his past life entering him, and then he'll have to really learn what it is to be human.
So if you're writing a script for a movie or a TV show, if you write a script for a movie or a TV show, go ahead, write in this battle. But the problem with this battle is it goes on way too long. Nothing interesting happens. There's no clever way they fight. It's just a description of dogfights in space.
Well, you know why,
it's right? Just like...
Because Thrawn wasn't there. If he were there, he would have known their art, and he would have been able to beat them with a military formation.
But it's just a description. It's like if somebody described the end of A New Hope to you. It's like Luke's X-Wing banked to the right and dodged turbo laser fire, and then the comms went blah, 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 and it just goes on too long. And... I was done with it halfway through. Honestly, it just sort of turned into background noise to me. I was listening to an audiobook. I was listening to an audiobook with like big sound effects and music and everything, and I was just like, yawn, I don't care. Can we skip to the end? Can I just see what the fallout from all this was? Because the main beats we needed to hit were... Senpai shows up, joins the New Republic, so they did get some ships out of this, and Mara Jade has to eject, but she loses all her signals and stuff, so there's almost no way anybody can find her in deep space, so she's gotta reach out to Luke with the Force, and we deepen Luke and Mara's connection.
Oh yeah.
And we find out that Thrawn's cloning people. That's all we needed to get, but it goes on forever.
Because you needed a Phalia, space battle, Ben!
The Phalia hot lasers! Mic thing... The Phalia hot mic thing was dumb.
Yeah, they should have shot him in the face. He's like, I am now lord of every... dead.
They should have just helped. Like, they should have just had the... They should have just had Phalia be like, yeah, help him. And then it would complicate things. Because I'm guessing where they're going with Phalia is that he's not actually a secret asshole. He's just a politician who has a different opinion of Admiral Ackbar. And so it would have been a good opportunity for Phalia to... For the gang to have complicated feelings about Phalia if he helped save them. But instead, he has this moment where Talon Card somehow knows what Phalia has been campaigning on. He's been campaigning on, and he's a big, like, big military supporter. And Talon Card also knows that he's insincere about those positions. And Talon Card also knows that Phalia, despite publicly and privately denying that he has ulterior motives, is somehow not going to deny this time, and he's going to admit to being insincere about his belief that the military is important.
Yeah. I don't know if you realize this, Ben, but Talon Card, he caught a glimpse of Phalia's art, okay? And Talon Card knows, oh, if I just study your art, that's how I'll win. Oh, look at this. It's Phalia kicking a bunch of people in military uniforms and also babies. That's how we're going to get him.
And Talon Card also knows that if Phalia says, I don't have a lot of respect for the military on a hot mic, that the military will then decide to give command of the ship to Leia? Why are senators in command of any ship ever anyway?
I don't think she was in command.
Anyway?
I think the captain took command.
Why was the captain not in command?
I think he took command back. He was only not in command. He was technically in command when Phalia was there, but he took all of his orders from Phalia because he had some political connection or whatever. So he was technically in command of the ship.
When you assign the military, when you're a senator, and you vote to send the military into a conflict, you don't, like, get to vote on, like, on the ground, in the moment, military decisions.
Well, he did, because he's Phalia, and he's going to be supreme commander of the military once Admiral Ackbar gets... executed for treason.
It was just like...
Which presumably is coming because they never cleared his name.
I was just bored. at that point, I was just ready to like move along, because we all know where this is going. Like, I get the gist. Let's speed it up.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about this podcast. We got the gist. Anything else you need to talk about? Are you excited for the next book to conclude the Thrawn trilogy, Ben?
I mean, I'm kind of interested, actually.
Yeah, you are.
There's more than I need. Like, I feel like the material is definitely being stretched. It definitely feels very side questy, and the side quests go on too long, and some of the battles go on too long. I don't think this needed to be three books. I don't think the prequels needed to be three movies, though. So again,
yeah, that's why you're wrong. Exactly. No problem.
That's not a problem with Timothy Zahn's writing. And that's another thing I wanted to point out, because I saw, as we always do, I looked at some of the reviews, and people who rated the book similarly to the way I rated the book had a lot to say about Timothy Zahn's writing being bad. The writing's not bad. It's not like super stylized and super interesting, just in terms of like prose and word choice and stuff like that. But it's not bad by any stretch. It's totally competent. And I get the vibe that Timothy Zahn is not an author working in isolation here. This is not necessarily a book he wrote by himself. He probably had a bunch of oversight. And I mentioned this in the first podcast. He probably had a bunch of oversight from Lucasfilm. There was probably a committee involved in saying, like, okay, how developed can these characters be at the end of this? What are we going to commit to? How's it going to affect merchandise? Things like that. So I think, like you said, we decided we were going to do a trilogy before we had an idea for a story. And we also decided that trilogy isn't going to kill any of the main characters. It isn't going to drastically change any of the main characters. And it's not going to follow new characters. So we were just after the original trilogy. People were demanding more Han, Luke, Leia, Lando, Chewie. But also, we can't transform them greatly because they're the tentpoles of this, what is now a franchise. So it was just kind of like a recipe to be a kind of middle-of-the-road, mediocre, I don't want to say time waster, but it's kind of a time killer, maybe is a better word. It's just there to entertain you for a little bit. It's not really saying anything. It's not doing anything. Some of the later EU books would do that once they had established new characters, like Leia's children are new characters that they can actually do things with. And I think that's where we start to get into the interesting, cool part of the EU.
All right. Anything else, or can we wrap it up?
Well, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are, I can't wait for the third one. Oh, man. I actually thought this one was better than the first one, for sure. There was less contrivance. There's less annoying. Like, it felt more like a butterfly flaps its wings and a hurricane happens on the other side of the world, rather than like, hey, let's all go to Lando's house now. It's the end of the first act. Let's all go to the same place. I'm interested because the conflict is actually going to take place in this final book. These first two books were just the lead-in for the final book, so I'm thinking that one's going to be pretty good.
I think I'd agree with that. I'd say, like, Dark Force Rising, Heir to the Empire, they didn't really know what they wanted to do with this story yet, or with the EU in general. And then Dark Force Rising, Timothy Zahn's sort of getting his feet under him. He's getting a little bit more confident with what he can do and what he can introduce. And then, yeah, we'll see probably a good conclusion. And I do like Thrawn. As much as I pick on him for the art thing, he's a fine villain. He's a fine villain for some cheesy sci-fi. And his interactions with Pelion are fun. I really like Pelion, too.
Yeah.
Basically, the new characters Timothy Zahn is able to introduce, I like. And I think Timothy Zahn's a good writer. If you have a problem with this book, it's not Timothy Zahn.
You get to hang out with your friends Luke and Han and Leia as they go on space adventures, and also some other people who are newer there.
Yeah.
All right.
Weird choices, though.
All right. I think we're done, Ben. So next month we were going to originally read Starship Troopers, but we didn't want another downer about fascism this time. And then we were going to pick another book, and that plan got ruined. And so now we're going to have a bonus episode where we pick next month's book. So stay tuned for that. Ben, what else are we plugging?
As usual, we're plugging the Twitter. You can follow us there at WABpod. You can check out blogs.wordsaboutbooks.ninja. Check out additional show notes and commentary. Next week, we're going to finish off this discussion with my experience with the EU and all the various books in that universe that I've read, and why I decided not to engage with the new Star Wars books.
Do you want to plug the Buy Me a Coffee? Is that...
Oh, yes. Yeah, we got a brand new thing you can do. You could go to buymeacoffee.com/WABpod, and you could financially contribute to this podcast. Why might you want to do that? I don't know yet. I don't have any bonus content for you, but I can
say...
You
just throw like $2 at us.
Yeah, I can say any money you give us is going to go right into the podcast, hosting costs, stuff like that. And we are going to be trying to do more bonus content, different kinds of media as well. So some written stuff, maybe some video stuff. We'll see. But yeah, if you feel like we deserve it, give us a tip.
And if you feel like we don't deserve it, consider it anyway. You know, sometimes you just give tips to people because you feel like society makes you obligated.
Yeah, we're gonna look at you real awkwardly. If you don't want to give us, if you don't want to buy us a coffee, but you still enjoy the show and you would like to help us out, share it on social media. That's one of the best things you can do.
Okay, bye.